Welcome to A New Lens with Common Good Capital, where we talk with investors, RIAs, fund managers, and philanthropists about their experiences within the different impact investing themes, as well as explore the power of stewardship and capital. I'm your host, Jeff Schaefer, CEO of Common Good Capital, and I'm here with Kos Marte. Welcome, Kos. So glad to have you. And just real fast, where are you located right now?
Yeah, I'm in New York City. Thank you, Jeff, for having me.
So Kos is the CEO and founder of Combody. He is an entrepreneur at heart and has turned a hard situation into an opportunity to help himself, formerly incarcerated men and women, and then everybody who's got a love handle like myself or who's trying to get or stay in shape. Pretty cool. This morning, four of us here at Common Good, we're doing a workout outside of our building, and it was a video stream up to your studio in New York. So I'd encourage everybody to try it sometime. Also, just for full transparency, I am an investor, a personal investor in Combody, believe in Kos and the mission that he's after. So welcome. Thanks for joining us.
No, thank you for having me, Jeff. I really, really appreciate it.
How often are you leading your classes? Because I didn't see you there today, but maybe you were.
No, I wasn't. I'm actually going to pick the 5:30 class this evening. I teach six times a week. I'll teach Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday at two times that day.
So I'm sure we'll get in, for those who don't know Combody, I'm sure we'll get into it here in a little bit, but it is a workout studio and online presence. And so we'll get more about that, but take us back. Give us a little bit about yourself. Where'd you grow up? Where'd you go to school? A little bit about your career, and then we'll get into some other questions.
Yeah, so I was born and raised in the same neighborhood I am right now, in the Lower East Side of Manhattan. It's super gentrified now. It wasn't the poodle walking gallery scene that you see now. It was very, very drug infested back in the day, and I got involved with that world. You know, my family members, some of them sold drugs, some of them used drugs, and you know, as a kid, that was that's what I alluded to and what I wanted in life, because I thought that's what would make me rich, and it did. You know, I made a lot of money selling drugs. I remember as a kid, you know, my mom would tell me I couldn't afford this or that, and it used to frustrate me. You know, I wanted more. I wanted what I asked for. And so I saw that what my cousins did. You know, they were standing on the corner selling drugs. They were wearing the big chains. You know, they had the cars, the woman. And then looking at the rap videos, you know, that all that illusion, you know, you think that's real success. And so that's what I aimed for. And that's what I went after. And I started dealing drugs. Well, I was smoking at 11 and then dealing at 13. So I started very, very early. I went to one of the worst high schools. I mean, I went to five different high schools, but I did graduate on time.
So why'd you go to five different high schools?
I just got kicked out of a lot of yeah. For dealing, for fights, for having legal stuff, for doing dumb stuff. Just crazy. I mean, that's a movie in itself, high school.
So you graduated though?
Yeah, I graduated on time. My school was crazy. It was one of the highest dropout rates in the city. It was supposed to have like a 500 student graduation. And it was, I remember it was 67. I can't never forget that. It was 67 students that graduated. It was me, and not to be stereotypical, it was me and 66 Asians. And that was And then every Hispanic and Black person dropped out or was locked up or, you know, women had kids. And that's what it was, you know, and it was just crazy. But I went to school to sell drugs, and that's what motivated me. Mm. But I did well in school. I was a quick learner. My mom was a teacher in the Dominican Republic. She taught elementary and middle school. So I knew basically my times tables before I even went to school. So I was great at math, which got me into trouble. I started dealing drugs. And by the age of 19, I was making over $2 million a year.
You were making over $2 million a year.
Yep.
How much of that were you spending, turning around and spending?
A lot.
A lot, yeah.
I can't even calculate. There was a couple of years where we probably generated $5 million in revenue.
Wow.
And so like me and I had a partner and I were pocketing about $2 million.
Did you live in fear at all during that time period?
Sort of. But then also I thought I was invincible. I thought nobody could stop me. I thought I was on top of the world. And I thought I could outsmart the system. You know, I was like, I'm not touching anything. You know, everybody's working for me and it's people doing this for me and blah, blah, blah. And people are getting paid out. And all I'm doing is touching money, you know? So yeah, I thought I was never going to get caught. And I did get caught a few times for like minor incidents and just doing dumb stuff. And everything got caught. I got caught up, you know, somebody told on me and everything went down. I had one of the biggest cases in 09. It led me to be sentenced to 7 years in prison.
So how old were you when you went to prison?
The first time I got arrested was 13. And then I did a juvenile stint, 15 to 16. I did another stint at 19 to 20. And then I did 4 years when I was 23 to 27. And then like 3 years of parole after that.
Maybe we're skipping stuff, so you can fill in if you need to. But the great news is you got released. So tell us what's happened since then and what you're doing today.
Yeah, so I was able to start this company called Combody, where we hire people coming out of the prison system to be our fitness teachers and also work at our fitness facility and do all types of administration work. I've been able to hire 48 people coming out of the system.
That's awesome.
No one has gone back in, which is, I think, the best success rate.
Yeah.
But this was all derived and like, you mentioned we skipped some of the story. I came up with this idea while I was in solitary confinement. First of all, when I went into my last prison stint, I was very overweight. Doctors pulled me in and they called me down to the first thing that they do when you go to prison is take your blood work, gives you all types of tests, shots or whatever. And then I got called down to the medical unit with this older man too. This guy might have been like 60, late 60s. He got called into the room first and he came out and sat because we had to be escorted by an officer. And then I go in and they tell me my cholesterol levels were through the roof, that they would place me on medication, that if I didn't start exercising or eating correctly, like, you know, I could probably receive a heart attack within 5 years. Mm. I was shocked. You know, I was at that time when they told me that news, I was 24 years old. I was overweight. But I didn't feel like I was going to die tomorrow. So I was like, nah, like it's not believable, blah, blah, blah. I remember going back and talking to the other inmate, the older guy, and they told him the same thing. You know, he had cholesterol issues and this guy was big. And I was like, damn, I'm getting like diagnosed. I'm 67 years old. You know what I mean? And it just lingered in my head, you know, as we walked back and going to our cell block and going to my cell. Just started thinking about like, you know, what I wanted to do. I didn't want to die in this place. You know, I need to get out and do something for my son. I don't want to raise my son behind bars or have him see me die in the system. And that was what really pushed me to work on myself physically. And mentally, I still had that same hustling mentality. I didn't think I did anything wrong dealing drugs. I was still I had that sneaky attitude of sneaking in drugs, you know, manipulating officers and doing all types of stuff to, you know, make ends meet in there. It was just a crazy lifestyle. But yeah, I mean, that woke me up physically where I began moving. I remember the next day they called the yard, you know, I went out to the yard and I just started running and people would call me Fat Forrest Gump and all these fat jokes. And I just ran around with the yard with my middle finger up. I just kept my head down and kept moving. And it was, it felt like some sort of meditation. You know, I felt like not incarcerated for that time that I was in, that I was working out and working on myself. And it became an addiction. I just started working out and I remember I couldn't run from like one light pole to the other. Like the yard was huge and it's like a big track and field type of deal. I would run, walk. And then eventually I built myself up where I was running 2 hours a day. I was working out of my cell, doing dips, push-ups, all types of calisthenics movements. And I lost 70 pounds in 6 months. I'm slipping off the medication.
Well, I just got to stop for a second here because I look at my daughter and not to pick on my daughter, but going into a gym is a bit intimidating for her. She's in college and I can understand that. Mm-hmm. But I also could say, I've been in prisons in a number of states. I can't imagine a heavy guy who can't run, who run walking on a yard like that, you had to be ridiculed, and that took some kahunas to do.
It was embarrassing. It was embarrassing. It was scary. And I knew how to work out from my previous stints. I was never like always the big guy. I was as a kid, I was active playing sports and all that stuff, but I was the only one running. You know, it was just very awkward to see anybody doing any type of stuff like that. Like most of the guys were like stuck on a pull-up bar, or they were playing basketball, or they were hanging out with different gangs, standing around, smoking cigarettes, you know, and I was like, excuse my language, F whatever anybody thinks, like I'm going to do it.
What do you think, and maybe you heard stuff, but those guys who watched you transform yourself over the 6 months, mm-hmm. What'd they say to you? Did they say anything? What, you know what they were thinking?
No. So the guys that were like making fun of me were like in solitary confinement.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But there was guys that were looking at me and I remember like people making fun of me, you know, going on the pull-up bar and I couldn't pull myself up. You know, I used to ask the guy behind. I was like, yo, can you give me a boost? And so like, somebody would, you know, I would crisscross my legs and they would like push me a little bit. But yeah, no, I started getting more respect for sure. You know, as other inmates started working out with me.
So you did get people, they then followed in.
Oh, yeah. So I had a whole group. And this is where like the whole class setting started. I mean, I was teaching classes in there. They would form a circle around me. I would start, you know, doing a warm up, doing all types of push-ups, burpees, all that stuff together. And then other guys would lead and come up with different routines. And it was like a camaraderie builder that we had out there.
There is something about sweating with brothers, friends, whatever. It just changes the relationship, doesn't it?
Yeah. Yeah.
Tell us about Combody, high level, and then I want to get into some personal stuff. Well, by the way, you've already been highly personal, so thank you. But and the other thing I think I want people to know is this story and cause is this is not about I don't want you to remember this interview because you were in prison. That's in the past. And who you are today, I mean, the reason why you and I are chatting today is yes, your prison stint is part of who you are. I don't view you as an ex-inmate. I view you as a guy who's an entrepreneur who's trying to make a difference in your life, trying to make a difference in the lives of your employees and in the world for that matter. So I just had to say that because, yes, we're going to learn a lot from you. I appreciate being open. But, you know, I've gotten to know you. You're just like anybody, any other friend. You've got emotions. You've got feelings. You're a good guy. And I think there's perceptions out there. So hopefully as people listen, they'll also recognize that. So tell us about Combody.
Yeah. So Combody, like I mentioned, is a prison style boot camp where we hire people coming out of the prison system. Is all calisthenics, no equipment, all body weight, cardio. We will kick your butt, you know, virtually or in person. And it could be done in a small constrained space, just like I did in my prison cell. So that's where the simplicity and I think the uniqueness of our workout is just straight 45 minutes nonstop and just really pushing yourself to the next level. A lot of people come to us and they're like, I can't do this. This is like way above me. But, you know, there's people, you do what you can. My mom, pre-pandemic, she hasn't came to the studio since the pandemic. She's older, but she's 67 now. She was coming four times a week, you know, like, and she was out of shape, but she kept moving and kept taking a break when she needed to, but kept getting back into it. And I think that's, you know, what it takes. You know, don't deter yourself from trying something, you know, just take a break and get back in it. And that's what I promote.
Look, we worked out this morning. I did it for 30 minutes. I did probably 80% of when I was there. I've got a bad wrist. How long would it take me to hang with you guys in the studio?
I don't know.
Well,
I don't know. I can't give you a exact number of how many days, how many weeks, but I've had people like insane improvements, you know, in just like 3 months. Like,
yeah,
we've had people like, you know, become stronger than any of us, you know. Like I got this guy Zach now that he came in, this guy, like, super skinny, was just a person that really never worked out, and always just, like, had a hard time, and just came, you know, one day just trying it, and then he was like, oh, this is a challenge for me, and it became a challenge that he wanted to accomplish, and now he's knocking out, like, he could knock out, like, 200 burpees in, like, 30 minutes, you know, so.
Those burpees are brutal. They just take so much energy.
Yeah. They work, though.
So now we've gotten a little bit about you. We've gotten, you know, perspective on Combody, and I'm sure, you know, more stuff will flow. But so now we're going to get into some harder questions. How would you best describe yourself in the context of where you are today in light of this overall journey that you're on called life?
I think one word to describe it is grit. I say that because I've been hit with so many barriers with, you know, dealing with life itself, but then also like just starting the company and, mm-hmm. and getting it off the ground and getting, you know, people to believe in it. I had so many people tell me like this was a dumb, crazy, stupid idea. And I just knew in my heart that it was going to work. You know, I remember coming home from prison and doing it outside in the park. And I was trying to get people from the neighborhood that I knew. And they were like, you know, this, are you crazy? Like a prison workout, you hiring people coming out of this is not, you know, you're going to scare people, you know? And I was like, nah, I know it's going to work. And then, and I'm talking about, these are people that were like hustling in the street and, you know, doing crazy stuff, and I'm still trying to get them to do positive stuff. And now today, you know, I've had people come up to me, those same people, like, yo, can you get me a job? You know, like, I want to work for you. So it's crazy. But not even that. I mean, just even the system itself, like there's policies. I had issues with getting business insurance that somebody has been incarcerated. There's just so many, I can't even get life insurance today. Because of my record, like there's over 10,000 regulations. If somebody has a criminal history, just in New York State, I mean, in the country worldwide, in the country nationally, there's 40,000 regulations, stipulations, policies against people that have criminal histories to get to get businesses started. Even like the PPP program, you know, like you probably heard that, like.
But they changed it, didn't they?
They changed the amount of time. And so if you were released from the system within 5 years was the first, you know, stipulation that you couldn't get PPP. So I got off parole and then like 5 years, I had that 5 year stipulation. Now they thanks to DeFi Ventures, they put a lawsuit in with some other organizations and they got it down to 2 years. But why even have anything? You know what I mean? Like, it's just crazy. Like, who comes up with these policies? You know, and I feel like it's definitely some internal racism. It's just a lot of discrimination that we need to start changing and perceptions.
See, what's interesting, and I don't want to get into the political side of this. I mean, and I'm happy to offline, but, you know, I look at it and go, and I'm white, so maybe I've got blinders on here, but the criminal justice system, to me, the heart of the issue from my perspective is just the way that people view those who've committed a crime. I don't care what color you are. There's just this, wait, these people are bad people. And you know, the irony is we've all committed sins and we've all broke the law. Now, some have done more than others. But until you can, and one of the statements I say, until you can see yourself as an inmate, you'll never understand grace, because we all should be behind those bars for something. Mm-hmm. But most people can't picture that. Those are somebody else. So,
yeah, I mean, everybody, I feel like everybody's born good. You know, everybody's born innocent. You know, we start learning things around us and society starts changing us with ideas and situations that we come about. And then, you know, then we become teenagers and we become adolescents that are just, will take a risk. You know, my friend said, you know, throw a potato at a person when I was 13. I'm gonna throw a potato at a person, you know, because I want to impress my friends, and I thought it was funny, you know, and we wouldn't think twice about it. People need to rethink about like what they've done, you know. What if, they were known for the worst thing they've ever done, you know?
Well, just go to a football game, an NBA game, whatever you want to pick, and think about how many are coming out of there that are if they got pulled over, they'd have a DUI. And they could go to jail. So, yeah, it's this holier than thou doesn't work. That's why I love having, you know, stories like and guys like you on here, because it's like you're just like anybody else. Okay, how would you say you were trying to change the world? And we may have already talked about it, but I'd love to hear you articulate that.
I don't know how I'm changing the whole world.
Not the whole world, but whatever piece you're changing, how are you doing it?
I think I'm changing definitely people's perceptions, and then I'm also giving people some type of hope and inspiration, especially the people that are coming out of the prison system. I came out with a book called Combody in 2018, and a lot of people it's been in a lot of prisons around the States, and a lot of people come out and they're like, you know, your story inspired me. I want to get involved, you know, and it has inspired and given people hope. But I think also like just having this platform at Combody, you know, bringing the people that work out with us is usually young professionals that never came across somebody that's been incarcerated. You know, they have this inner perception because media has always, put out like where killers and rapists and all this crazy stuff, which in reality, I mean, that there is that 1% of the prison population that have, mm-hmm. that have, I call them mental health issues. And there's a lot way more mental health issues, but I'm talking about those like killers, rapists, a minute of the population have those charges, but the majority of the people, you know, grew up in certain circumstances, got addicted or whatever situation happened to them, and they just want a second chance at life. And mm-hmm. so when people come into the studio or they meet us anywhere, they see a regular person, mm-hmm. you know, they're greeted by a person and, you know, coming inside, and they're like, this person is not that bad, you know? I've had people like really shake, like, because we build the studio to look like a prison. So they before they go into that gate, into the workout area, they're like, oh my God, I don't know what's going on. Yeah. And, you know, they're ready to piss their pants, and some of them run to the bathroom before they go in. But then, you know, I've held people's hands and put them in there, and they're like, wow, that was incredible. You know?
Yeah, that's cool. Now I'm going to digress for a second. Because I've been in prisons, and they're not fun places. And some of the guys, I'm not arguing. Well, the culture within a prison can be brutal. So my question to you is like, we're talking to you today and having a phenomenal conversation. But I bet this is not the conversation that you and I would have been having, you know, maybe early on in your prison stint, or maybe it was. But what changed you? What changes your heart to be able to sit and have these dialogues and lose that thug mentality or whatever that mentality is?
Yeah, I mean, the street mentality, you know, I think some of it I still have in terms of like there is a street ambition that you want, you know, in terms of hunger and going back to grit. But, you know, going back to like, you know, I feel like it was a facade, and it was a mask, mm-hmm. you know, that you put on to impress others, to, you know, and I feel like we're uncovering that with Combody, you know, like just be yourself, you know, share your story. Don't hide what you've done, you know, just have people accept what you've done and move forward. But that changed when I was, it definitely changed when I was in solitary confinement. I'm not saying that solitary is, I think solitary is the worst thing, right. One of the worst things in the world. But when I ended up in solitary, I had about 2 months towards my release. I was going to be released on an early release program. And I got into some altercation with an officer that placed his hands on me, and he beat me down. And so I was devastated because this officer was letting, you know, basically told me that, you know, I'm going to serve another 3 years in prison. And so I was like, you know, I was so devastated in that cell. I was hopeless because I couldn't communicate with anyone from the street. And I remember sitting in that cell and the officer comes to my door and passes me a paper pen and an envelope. And I grab that and I write out a huge letter to my family, letting them know, you know, I need a lawyer. I need help. Get me out of this situation. And then I realized I had no stamp to send out this letter with. And so I was so devastated at the fact that I couldn't communicate with anybody. And so I was like, you know, banging my head on the wall. And I remember my sister found out I was in solitary because I was constantly calling home. And she writes me and tells me, we found out you're in trouble. You know, all I want you to do is read Psalm 91 from the Bible. And she's super religious. She's like, I call her Mother Teresa's Child, you know, and she tells me to read this. And I'm like, hell no, you know, I need a lawyer. I don't need God, you know, like get the hell away from me with this. Blah, blah, blah. Like that was what's going on in my head. And all I had was anger. And I remember out of boredom, like I sat there for like 2 days and all I had was this Bible that she gave me early on in my incarceration that I never opened up. But the only thing that you have in solitary is your religious items.
Mm-hmm.
And so I decided to open it and turn to the pages, which states, he who dwells in the shelter of the Most High will rest in the shadow of the Almighty. I will say to the Lord, he is my shelter and my fortress, my God in whom I trust.
Mm-hmm.
And as I was reading those words, a stamp fell out of my Bible. And it was the stamp that I sent out the letter. I had chills run down my body. I still get chills every time I, you know, hear my story. And I'm still not like every Sunday church goer. I mean, I do believe in God. I do believe in a higher power. But it changed my whole perception because I read the Bible from front to back and I started realizing what I was doing was not only affecting my family, but I was affecting thousands of people that I sold drugs to. I affected so many of their family members. And this is where I began praying and ask God, how can I give back? And this is where the idea of Combody came about, you know, in that cell. Because I already lost weight. I was working out and all this stuff. And I was like, damn, you know, I could start this boot camp. And so I started in that prison cell. I started imagining that I was like out in the street, like training hundreds of people in the yard, you know, and it became a reality, which is crazy.
I gotta believe, I mean, just as I was thinking about this interview today, if you really sit back and go, and first of all, I started going to prisons when I was 20, 21, I don't know what it is. And so even the fact that I'm get to have this interview with you is blowing my mind. And then you're like, when you think about it, you had four grown men outside of our building. You're getting us to jump around and do crazy stuff. And you're in New York. And I mean, that's just crazy from where you have come from.
Yeah, it's insane. I mean, we've trained over 50,000 people all around the world right now. Like, and I guess that's how I've touched the world.
Yeah, you've touched the world. Yeah. Yeah. I had never heard that part of the story. So thank you for sharing and being vulnerable. And man, it just gives me a different perspective of you and where you've been. When did you realize the power of capital? And I guess that could be the positive side of it or the negative side, but answer however you would.
I mean, I definitely understood capital as a kid, you know, dealing drugs on the street. And I saw the power, or even before, I think even, you know, as I saw my mom struggle, and it was just crazy times where she had to like get stuff at Salvation Army. We lined up for like soup kitchen stuff, got bread, you know, from church and all this stuff. Like, and then to see, you know, and then I would see like these and these shows, like, I don't know, Full House, Step by Step, you know, you see these white picket fences and you're just like, damn, only if I had money, you know, I would live the dream. You know, I would have these problems where, you know, I would, have to like walk the dog, and that'll be a problem. Like, money will solve everything. So I think as a very young kid, I understood that, capital was powerful.
So you're making 2 million, 5 million. Were you happy?
I mean, in a sense, yes. In a sense, no. I felt trapped. I didn't want to be a drug dealer for the rest of my life. I didn't want to live that life, and I wanted to find a way to get out. But I couldn't. And it was just because I was just stuck on this day-to-day. There was business keep going, like the money kept going. So like, why would I say no to money? And it became a like, hey, I'm chasing this, activity, and it just didn't stop. So I felt trapped, but then I did have fun. You know what I mean? I'm not gonna say like, hey, we splurged and had parties and all this stuff or whatever we wanted with friends. You know what I mean? And
So what would you tell your son about that, about money?
tell him that money isn't everything. I keep it very transparent with my son. He knows where I've been at. He knows everything I do. I don't, hide anything from him. And he's an incredible kid. Like I haven't never met a kid like that is so good. Like he irons his clothes, his uniform before bed, so he'd be on Zoom call with his like, tie and he goes to Catholic school, and you know what I mean? Like this kid is such a good kid. I mean, he's 13 now, but so we'll see what happens in high school. But yeah, no, I mean I just keep it very, very transparent with him. Lost that question. What was the main question you said? What would I tell my kid?
Oh, just about money. I think you've answered it. Yeah, you answered it. We're going to assume that from a worldly perspective, you are already successful. Let's just assume that Combody is going to continue to flourish and impact the whether it's the world or whether the United States, whatever. As you go down that path, how do you think about stewardship and what's that mean to you?
Stewardship means leadership, and I feel like leadership comes with putting the work. I don't know. I don't have like this. I don't have this ego, I don't. I don't. And I think that may be a problem for me too. I don't mind like scrubbing the floors. I don't mind like putting the work in and getting my hands dirty. And sometimes people are telling me like, "Yo, you need to regulate. Like, you need to tell people to do this, to do that." And I don't know. I felt like that's how I also operated in the street. Sometimes I started from the bottom and, did those hand-to-hand transactions, every single day, 24 hours a day. And I feel like that's what people respect about me, is that I'm not going to be sitting on a high horse, telling people what to do. Is that I'm going to put the work in with you. I'm still teaching classes. I don't have to teach classes. I can hire somebody else to do it. I'm still there, and I still want to be there, and I love it. It's just for me, it's a natural thing just to like not procrastinate and wait for somebody else or tell somebody else to do the work. I'd rather do the work myself.
I think the word that comes to mind is servant leadership. The way you're modeling it. You're being a leader, and some of that is rolling your sleeves up and getting dirty, and you're not above anybody else, and you get it done. So I think that's awesome. And I've personally have been under servant leaders, and that's the way that I want to be led. So and look, the fact that you had a bunch of guys in the yard that you were leading, you're doing something right. If you could make a dream come true for your life, what would that be?
One dream I want to do is like really take Combody to the next level. I want to take it to that. I want to be the next CrossFit. I want to be the next Peloton. I want to hire and employ as many people coming out of the system. Really create a dent in the recidivism rate. That's a dream I have. I feel like is attainable, is achievable, and we're working at it. We're on a micro level right now, but I feel like we're gonna get there, and I'm not gonna stop until I get there.
So, if somebody wanted to work out with you, How do they do that?
So you could go to combody.com, check us out on Instagram, Twitter, Facebook, all that, you know, social channels, and hit us up. But you could just sign up right at combody.com. We actually have an app called Combody that you could download in the App Store or the Android Store, and sign up for a class. $14 a month for any video on demand platform. And then you have $20 a class if you want to do it virtually. If you want to come in person, you also have that option too. So just hit us up.
Koss, I really appreciate your time. Appreciate you being vulnerable. I know people will love to hear what you're doing. And I know from my perspective, I'm cheering for you. Not only you personally, but the impact of what you're doing. I mean, if you think about it, there's so many things that you're impacting. Not only people's health, which is hugely important. You and I have talked. My heart is clearly with formerly incarcerated men and women. And you know, and so just to see you hire more and more, and to get them back on their feet and to give them dignity and to give them a job. And I mean, that is so important. And the irony to me is the COVID over the last year, you know, I think you talk to most Americans, it'd be like, a job. Yeah. I mean, we all have jobs in theory. It's not real impactful. Jobs to anybody is impactful today. Absolutely. Jobs for formerly incarcerated men and women are even that much more impactful.
Yep.
I mean, not only for themselves and the people, what people don't realize is just the downstream impact to the family, to the kids, to whatnot. And so I want to see you flourish for yourself, but then also just the model and for the people that you can influence as you move forward. And hopefully you can get me to lose 20 pounds while I'm doing it.
Let's do it.
All right.
Thank you.
Don't forget to subscribe to A New Lens with Common Good Capital on your podcast app of choice. And please rate and review us on iTunes, Google Play, and Spotify. This will help new listeners find the show and hopefully put them on a path to a more fulfilling portfolio within the impact investing space. I'm Jeff Schaefer. We'll see you next time. This podcast is a production of Common Good Capital and does not constitute an offer or a solicitation of an offer. Such offer would only be made through a private placement memorandum. Prospective investors in private placement securities should be aware that making an investment is speculative and involves a high degree of risk, including the risk of losing all or a portion of an investment. Investments of this nature are illiquid and subject to substantial restrictions upon transferability.